Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Just a little disclaimer, this is what we call a 24 superfan recording. There will be spoilers. Thank you for listening.
It is 2021, and November 6th of this year marks the 20-year anniversary of the show 24. I don't know how that is, because I'm only 25 myself. But somehow, the show started 20 years ago, and what's cool is that we're still talking about it. It's one of those shows that once it gets inside your bloodstream, you can't really get it out of there. It's almost like a virus from the show. And one of the things that is interesting about, even as we talk about this now, we've assembled this team of super fans, and we're going to talk about the show, and we're going to go season by season and break it down and what we liked and what our favorite parts were, all that kind of stuff. But before I even start, we are on Zoom, and on Zoom, people say, oh yeah, when you're on a Zoom meeting, it's like the Brady Bunch. I don't agree with that argument at all. Zoom looks like it does because of 24. That is my theory. I'm gonna stand on that right now. We are in split screen, and we're gonna do this in split screen like we were at CTU. And this is a cool thing. So, what I want to know, and what I want to pose to the fine gentlemen that are here as part of our super fan panel today, with 20 years of 24, celebrating 20 years of 24, what was it about the show 24 that hooked you? Do you remember what it was?
I'll go first. I think as a kid, it was just after 9/11, and I was 14, so I was a freshman in high school. And so it was the end of the first episode, episode one, and the first time seeing all the plots occurring at once with the split screen. So you really got a sense of how grave the day would be there. And there was so much more story to follow. You know, what's going to happen with this? What's going to happen with that? So the multiple storylines in the split screen with the clock made it feel very real. And then, of course, the ending with the plane exploding.
Okay. Very good. Very good. To be clear, too, if you're listening to this podcast and you haven't actually watched season one, we're talking about season one today. There was a disclaimer at the beginning of the podcast, but I'm going to say it again. There will be spoilers. But to be honest, after 20 years, it's not really a spoiler anymore. It's just established fact. Okay. So we're going to talk about plot points. We're going to talk about all those kind of things. But if you haven't watched season one, I want you to go back and watch season one so you know what we're talking about. While you're watching season one, feel free to put this podcast on Spotify on repeat so it'll drive our numbers up. That'd be great. Appreciate it. So thank you very much. Appreciate that. Joey, Can I call you Joey?
Of course, absolutely.
Okay, very good, very good. I like that. I agree with what you said. It wasn't like anything I'd ever seen before. How about you, Dustin?
The moment that I remember, like, of just like, man, I got to watch the next episode. Mm. And it seems so insignificant compared to all the other twists that episodes ended on. But I remember at the very end of episode one, Dan and everyone in the truck were driving on the street, and then Terry and quote unquote Alan York just drove right past them. I was like, oh my goodness, how could they miss each other?
Exactly.
And,
yeah.
And compared to the other, you know, 205 episodes or whatever it is, that's such an insignificant twist or just like a moment where you're holding your breath. But that was the one that was like, I can't even believe, like, they just missed each other. So
The show could have been called One. If they just run into each other, if you just recognize, oh, that's Terry in the truck there, the show would have been over. You know, we solved it. We resolved. Well, we didn't have Kim yet, but you know, it could have been called One. It actually was probably going to be called 13 because they didn't actually get a full series order right at the beginning. They started a show called 24, but they only had 13 approved. That's pretty bold in my opinion. But I agree. In that moment, I remember that watching that and going, oh my, if you just, wait a minute, you're just, what, TV doesn't do that. It doesn't mess with you like that. I love the fact that at the end, you realize, I don't know what's going on at all. Like, I kind of have an idea. You're kind of moving through the families. Again, why they were up at midnight playing board games and hanging out, I didn't get that either, but that's a California thing maybe. But the idea that you had this nice scenario, and yeah, by the way, he does this, and she's going to go look, and they're going to figure it out. One of the interesting things, too, that for me that I got hooked on was the idea that they have, at any point, two casts going, right? Technically, you had almost two shows happening because you had the Jack story, right? And then you had the Palmer story. And really, I love the fact that one of the things that really drew me in, that they threw you in. They didn't do a whole lot of time of explanation. Within that first hour, you kind of knew what was going on. You knew the relationship to David Palmer. All that kind of stuff had started to come through. They didn't give you a whole lot of time to catch up. But you really didn't have to, which is good. Absolutely. There were different points throughout the season. I always say, like, my story was that, a friend of mine kept telling me, you got to see this show. You got to see this show. And so I jumped in the middle of it. The first season, and the episode I watched was Terry had amnesia, and that was when I realized you can't really just jump into the middle of the show and understand what in the world's going on. So I waited until you could rent the DVDs. So I went to the local video store and I rented the DVDs. I rented the first two, and I watched the first three episodes. I drove that night, drove those DVDs back to the rental store, and then I drove to Walmart to pay full price for the DVDs, like brand new. So, which means I paid full price. I have my own, I call myself the 24 rental agency because I have three different copies usually out of the house at any given point because of pawn shops. I can, you know, right now you can go and find pretty much the entire series and you can probably get it for less than 30 or 40 bucks in the right city.
Well, and that says a lot about the show because Terry's amnesia is widely considered to be one of the weaker plot points, and if that still got you hooked,
exactly,
says a lot about the show.
Well, I knew I wanted to keep watching it. I just knew I needed to know more than I could, you know, I was going to know at that point. But yeah, okay. Do you own the box sets?
Yeah, I have multiple versions of season one, and then I own all the seasons after that.
Okay, yeah, very cool, very cool. I have friends that have. Their whole families have gotten hooked on the show. I said I was Netflix for them before there was actual Netflix. Crazily enough, and I know you'll relate because we've had some conversations. You'll relate to this is that I can stream it now because of Disney and Star. So 24 is on Disney right now in Canada. However, I got the sets upstairs, but instead of walking all the way upstairs and getting the sets out, I literally will just watch it streaming as if I'd never seen the show before. I just finished season six, and I'm in the middle of season seven right now.
Yeah, we're watching on Hulu right now, season seven. But okay. Sometimes if it's more convenient to watch on Hulu, we'll do that, sacrificing we have to watch the ads with it. But then DVDs, of course, you can just skip right through. It's about 7 minutes longer if you watch on Hulu because of the ads.
what I find is interesting too, I talked to Aaron from 24 Universe last week. And what because we're all part of 24 Universe, right? I recommend it. Anybody that's listening, if you're not part of the 24 Universe world, you're going to love it because you'll get updates on everything. People post all the time. And one of the things, if you watch 24 Universe, when we started having this conversation about doing this podcast, 24 Universe was about 10,000, maybe 200 members. They just crossed 11,000, which means a show that's 20 years old is gaining fans because of the Disney Plus thing. Like that's not even a month old, but around the world, people are discovering 24 for the first time. And then they're finding the 24 Universe. It's not normal. I work a lot with social media numbers and that. It's not normal for a fan page to gain numbers, certainly when it's not something hot and new, right?
That and people are continuously on the page asking, when's it coming back? When's it coming back? That is asked over and over.
Exactly. Exactly. And I've got my kind of ideas and theories on that too. And certainly that's something we'll get into, you know, as we keep going. In season one, okay, you're introduced to these families. You got these things. We talked about how you got hooked. Was there a particular scene in season one where you knew that this was even more special than any other show you watch?
I think when Alan York revealed that he was not Alan York in such a dramatic way.
Yeah.
When Janet says, "Who are you?" That's when I was like, okay, I think I'm starting to understand what this show is about.
That is one of, if I had to pick like three moments, that's one of my top three as well, because I remember, you know, it's the rug is being pulled out from under you because you trust this guy. Clearly Jack doesn't know him, but Jack trusts him to take care of Terry and so we were all duped at the same time, in my opinion. Like when she said that, I remember just my jaw dropping. And again, fortunately, I wasn't watching it live. I was watching it on DVD. So I could actually stop it and go, wait a minute, what just happened? What do you mean you're not Alan York? And then, of course, he ends her life. So the only person that knew he wasn't Alan York was her, which was Janet, right? Crazy. How about you, Joey?
I'd say there was two moments, really, when Jack kidnapped Ted Koffel and threatening the Russian gulag and Koffel, you know, with the, I'm going to put this down your throat and pull it out. It's going to rip your stomach lining with you. And then Koffel, all of a sudden, in a Serbian accent going, "You will pay, Bauer. You will pay." I like that because it was when Jack began to really figure out the real scope of the plot. It was more about just Ira Gaines and the kidnapping of his family so that Jack would kill Palmer. It was an eye for eye revenge. Yeah. And then after that, I think it was maybe the next episode when Kevin picked up Kevin Carroll, who used, you know, of course we thought was Alan York.
Right, right.
With Koffel's dead body in the back seat and then going, "Hello, Alan." So Jack had figured it all out and Kevin's like, "Oh my God." So then he starts shooting the bulletproof glass separating the driver's side. Jack not fazed at all, and then going erratically around the parking garage was a lot of fun. Yeah. And then the second moment was when Jack confronted CT at the very end in the parking garage doing her job. Jack goes, "Your job? My wife and daughter almost died today because you were doing your job." And just the emotion, and just, yeah, it was so real. He's such a great actor.
Yeah.
And, you know, just in that moment, and as well as, you know, throughout the entire series, the numerous times where he almost killed somebody in his grasp, and this time being no exception.
Yeah. 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 No, that I agree with everything you just said. All those moments, because in my experience, TV had been predictable. Even your spy shows, your different things, you kind of knew, okay, if they do this, then this is going to happen. And if they do this, then this is going to happen. And now I'm confronted with a show, which, again, the only season I actually binged was season one because I had it all at once. Every other season I watched week to week, multiple times, rewound, watched, analyzed it, took it apart. But having the luxury of binging that first season, you're stunned at the end of every episode. I was stunned at the end of every episode to the point where I was traveling a lot for work, and I was driving to Toronto, and I would wait to the last possible minute. Toronto's not an easy city to drive in because of traffic. So I, in my head, said, well, I'm going to keep watching 24 until like 9 o'clock. And then I'm going to make the 4-hour drive to Toronto. I'll get there, I'll check in, and then I'll be ready to go to work the next day. But of course, I took my DVD player with me. and hooked it up at the hotel. And so I got to the hotel and I went, oh, I can watch one more. I can watch two. I remember going into meetings completely bleary-eyed and totally exhausted. And I couldn't wait to get out of the meeting because I was going to go back to the hotel and keep watching 24. And it was that – I didn't anticipate it was going to be that intense. But certainly the Alan York, Kevin Carroll moment was one of those where I just went, oh, I don't know anything at all. Everything I thought I knew, everybody I thought I could trust, all bets are off. All bets are off. Absolutely. I did like the – I'm trying to remember David Palmer's secretary's name.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Patty,
yes. The scene near the end when you clearly, Sherry has okayed in her head, look, this is going to happen. And in my opinion, Sherry wanted leverage over David in general. Okay. And so she was like pushing David towards Patty. And the scene where they are meeting in the room and you're like, okay, he's going to give in. Like he's got an open door. And when he stops and he fires her on the spot, that was another moment where I was like, okay, this show is different than anything I've ever seen. Because normally on normal TV, he would have just given in, right? He would have been like, okay, I got fair game. And Sherry would have had that over his head. And I thought, what a cool way of doing it, of presenting him with the temptation and having, and showing that you can actually say no and say, no, it really helped you understand David Palmer for the rest of the series that he was on. That no, this isn't a guy that's just going to fall for something just because it's there.
Yeah, like you said, it just shows how much integrity he has, like I said, for the rest of the series. And it really revealed to me at that moment how power hungry Sherry was.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, to all ends for sure. You could take nothing for granted with the show, right? Which I thought was amazing. So who did you think was, and again, outside of Jack Bauer himself, who, in your opinion, was the most valuable player of that season, that first season?
Okay, I'll go first. Okay. I was going to say, of course, it's tough because every character, I think, is amazing in their own right. I was going to go with Richard Walsh at the very beginning because Jack wouldn't have gotten as far as he did throughout the day if without Richard's help. Richard died giving Jack the key card that exposed Nina as the villain the first time before she talked to Jack and they realized they had an alibi because they were away together at the time frame.
Yeah, I agree. That's good. What about you, Dustin?
I think it probably has to be Nina. I mean, all things considered, right up until 10:58, that night. I mean, she was there for him. She lied for him. She covered for him. And I think, I like what they did because she wasn't working for the Drazens, right? They have enlisted her. And they kind of, I'm in the middle of season eight now, and it was kind of the same thing for Dana Walsh, right? She was just kind of hired by Samir. She wasn't actually working with them as opposed to some other moles that we've seen. But, I mean, I don't think Jack would have gotten nearly as far and had as much success if it wasn't for Nina, just helping him throughout the day.
Yeah.
Which is what made her betrayal so much.
And I'm unclear from behind the scenes. I can't remember. Did she know that she was going to be the mole? I've heard conflicting stories over the years.
I'm pretty sure the actress found out probably like maybe three episodes before, like when she started reading the script. I do not think, because yeah, I'd be really surprised if they knew that far in advance.
What I find, if you look at the context of when the show was released, so we're talking 2001, 20 years ago, and that was the Star Wars stuff was still in there, the secrecy, you know, at a certain point. It became a real issue for studios to hide every secret and every possible plot point and everything else, with the secret scripts. And, you know, you got to sign this. And if it leaks, it's going to get traced back to you. There was this super, I mean, it still exists, but this super paranoia about leaking plot points and that kind of stuff. And so this was kind of in the beginning of that. And what I thought was really cool about the way they ran 24 was that they would just come up with creative ways to throw you off. Looking at, you know, shooting this story, Leslie Hope is telling me kind of the background of the story is that Kiefer did not want, to have Terry die at the end. Like she said it wasn't like he just didn't like it. Like he was adamant. He said, if Terry dies and I've spent the entire day trying to save her life, I'm a loser. Right. And that is not going to get us a second season. And that's not that, you know, how do we come back from that after the first season? So she said it was a real, you know, it certainly wasn't a fight or anything, but there was a real struggle to how it was going to end. And Kiefer certainly was somebody that had some clout and had the ability to affect the story. And he, you know, he's the kind of person that, from what I've seen, is can dig in and say, but no, I don't believe it. So what they did was, let's just shoot both endings. Right. When you shoot both endings, even the cast and crew doesn't know which one you're going to air at the end. So, you know, even if you leak something, it's okay because we can just switch it out. I always thought that was really, instead of getting super paranoid about the story leaking, they just found creative ways to get around that
issue. And I heard that shot the alternate ending and they compared them side by side. They realized instantaneously, yeah, we have to have her die.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
There's no comparison about it. Like I watched it a few days ago, and it's hokey. It's no good. So
yeah, I'm yeah. Completely,
and I think you know, if I had to put money, I think the thing that really sold it, and how they just continually changed their formula is having a silent clock. You know, and then that was. I mean, now that was something that you honor people with. You know, sometimes I think they used it when they shouldn't have, and I think there were missed opportunities.
Right, but, right.
I think that because when I actually read a spoiler somewhere because I got into it probably, I think season four was on the air when I started.
Okay.
So I had stumbled across it and I knew it. But even with that silent clock, which you never saw before, it really hit it home.
It really did. It really was different than, you know, it was a, as you said, a way of paying homage to the character that we lost without having to do anything at all. Like you're used to, you know, certainly by that point, you've sat through 24 episodes of going to commercial with the clock, coming back from commercial with the clock, going back. So it was just like, for me, almost like a Pavlov's dog response or something. It would go off and I'd go, okay, I can go make a sandwich. And then it's back on. I remember I probably seriously injured myself at least four times running back when I was watching it live, running back from the kitchen because I didn't want to miss a single second of that show. And the rule was no talking. There was, you know, no talking whatsoever. But that certainly was a situation where you didn't want to miss a second of it. And that clock signified the show's back on. You better get back in here. And so that when I noticed it the first time that clock didn't actually do anything at the end, it was like, ooh, that is ominous and eerie at the same time.
Very special. And yeah, I would lock myself in my bedroom and say it's 24 time. Nobody bug me.
It's true. And you had to. You absolutely had to, especially when you're watching the live, for sure. Because like I said, we did one season and it's, I think it was five where a friend of ours said, hey, we should all get together and watch it, all the fans. So we all went to that person's house and watched it on the big screen. Cause at that point, everybody didn't have a big screen like they do now. And, so we went over there and I think there were like six couples all watching the show and four of them were talkers. And I don't know how I got out of there okay, because I was ready to lose it, because it was like, it's on now. You need to stop. And I think we're all still friends, I think. I haven't talked to them in 15 years. But yeah, that was a moment where I was like, I'll never do this again. I can't do this as a group exercise. This is not, you know, this is not team building. This is a team breaking. I almost lost a lot of friendships that night for sure. But I needed to have silence. I needed to have snacks, and I needed to be ready for anything. And that's I wasn't used to that with TV. The idea of having to be ready for anything, because anything could happen. I always preface it with the first time I saw, did you ever see the movie 12 Monkeys with Bruce Willis? Yeah, it's a good one. I think you'll like it. It's worth checking out. But without spoiling anything for you, Joan, at the very end of the movie, we were in the theater and we saw that in the theater of me and a buddy. And at the end of the movie, nobody moved. You know how normally people start to get up as the credits are starting and start to, you know, the lights go up. The lights went up and everybody in the theater just sat there stunned, because the ending that they gave us it didn't wrap it all up in a bow. It didn't really give us what we wanted, but it was oddly satisfying. And I remember sitting in the theater going, I like this. Like, this is cool. Like, it's really cool that I don't know what happened, and I can use my imagination. And I remember the same thing leaving season one going, oh, they'll bring her back, right? And then I still had a couple months to wait, which is a little frustrating. But yeah, it was like nothing I'd ever seen on TV for sure, because I couldn't predict what was going on. And I really believe, and I know we have our theories about 24 and its impact on the landscape of TV from 2001 to now. I don't think you could have done a show like Lost if 24 hadn't been on the first. I think there's several different rules that were broken with 24 that gave a lot of people permission to do different things on TV than they'd ever done before. Any thoughts on that?
I think it's amazing that 24 was the first show to ever do a real-time storyline. Surprising to me. They did it beautifully. I mean, they crushed it. So I think them being the first was really great.
I think there was, and again, I don't know officially, but I've heard that one of the inspirations of the ideas behind was a movie called Nick of Time with Johnny Depp. I don't know if you ever heard that one.
I've heard of that. I've heard of the movie, and I think I've heard the theory before as well.
Yeah. It was probably, I'd have to look up, probably 99 maybe. It's late 90s. I can pinpoint it. But in the late 90s, he did this movie called Nick of Time, and it was done in real time. And it was, you know, it's like you have 90 minutes to fix this. And they kept it to the 90 minutes. And I think that was kind of a germ of an idea when 24, again, I don't know if it was a direct thing, but certainly that concept, that was the first time I'd ever seen that at all. Anybody try to do anything in real time. Because there's so much you have to think about when you're shooting in real time. And boy, they covered all the bases, and, you know, the planning behind that had to have been insane.
Yeah, the real time plus all the multiple storylines happening at the same time. It wasn't just one single plot.
Right. Yes, exactly. Multiple things happening, all that kind of stuff. And L.A. traffic, which I think I've been to California. I've been to L.A. once, and I hated – like I mentioned Toronto earlier, I hate traffic. And it's not the most – I loved being in L.A. I didn't enjoy sitting in traffic for long periods of time. So I think that's where you have some creative license to – you know, kind of play with the numbers on that as far as how fast you can get across town and those kind of things. But of course, when you've got access to a helicopter and you know how to fly a helicopter, I think that makes life a little bit easier for Jack Bauer for sure. Absolutely. Absolutely. So when's the last time you watched season one? Either.
For me, it was last year.
Okay. Okay.
I actually started it, We were winding down from Christmas last year. I was like, you know what? Everyone's happy. Kids are playing. I'm going to put on 24. And I'm in the middle of season 8.
Nice. I tend to try to do once a year, go through the series. Obviously, I had a little more time last year. So I was able to do it a lot sooner than normal. But I also have this game I call 24 Roulette, where I'll, whatever streaming service it's on, I'll just kind of close my eyes and roll through and just land on an episode. Almost like spinning the wheel at the end of Price is Right, where it's like I just roll it and then wherever I land, I'm in it. And it's like I can never just watch one episode because I'll just watch one and then I'll find another one. No. If I watch one, I'm probably going to watch at least the next two or three to cover, you know, a major plot, that major thing that happens, and that kind of stuff. So,
and it was amazing that every single episode left you with a cliffhanger for the next episode.
Exactly. Yeah, TV didn't do that before 24. It really did not. And like I said, I think there's a myriad of shows that are out there that if 24 hadn't hit the scene, I don't think they would have ever made more than a season or two seasons of any of those ideas, because it seems like it should have been, like somebody should have done it before, but it's so creative in the fact that they committed to it. And even to the point in discussing with Leslie Hope too, is that they weren't sure if they were going to continue with it into the second year and into the third year. But I'm certainly glad they did, because I think it would have changed the nature of everything. Like even watching, like there's a show now called FBI that actually Carlos Bernard directed a couple of episodes this season. And it's good, and it's got a pace to it, but it's not the same urgency because it's not in real time. There's just something about the split screen and the real time and all those things that worked to make that show really what it was.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Absolutely. Have you ever started a show because there was somebody from 24 in it? Or is that just me?
Yeah, Designated Survivor. I watched that on ABC, both on Netflix and live, and oh, it's amazing.
Yeah. I really liked it. Some of the same rules.
I tried Designated Survivor, and I was not able to get into it. I got halfway through the first season, and just didn't do it for me.
Yeah, I mean, some of the same rules applied, I think, later on in the show, certainly into the second season and third season, some of the same rules of 24 of that anybody's expendable. Certainly, I mean, they start with wiping out, you know, so many people, you know, kind of half the government or whatever it was, which was, I thought was a bold move for the show. But it took me a while to kind of stick with it, and then I kind of stepped off, and then I came back and appreciated it a little bit more.
And it was great to see Jack and Kim Raver back together.
Yes, absolutely. There was a show called Revolution that I think they got two seasons out of that. And it was Billy Burke, and he was the lead in the show. But I remember there's one episode, it's right near the end of season one, where Leslie Hope is playing the president. Glenn Morshower is an official in government, and Annie Wershing. Was it Annie Wershing? Might have been Kim Raver. One of those two. But there were four cast members in it. And it was like bingo for 24. Like my bingo card was full. It was like, yes, this is officially one of the best shows ever.
Air Force One and RoboCop are the same way.
Yes, absolutely.
Air Force One with Franklin Ford has a bunch of people. And then RoboCop has like every villain from the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, everybody that was on... Clarence Boddicker. Everybody that was in Clarence Boddicker's crew has been in 24 at some point, which, I mean, even up to Peter Weller, which is pretty amazing. And the other kicker of that, which I didn't realize until I kind of went back and I remembered it from years ago and watched it again, which you can find on YouTube, there was a RoboCop series. I think they got two or three seasons out of it. But it was a RoboCop series that was filmed, I think it was done in 2000. So just before 24 started. And Leslie Hope is in it. So it gives you, her character was named Ann R. Key. Which again ties in with RoboCop and New Detroit and everything else. But that gives you an additional piece of the puzzle with all the RoboCop team Peter Weller and, you know, Leslie Hope were all kind of tied into that 24 piece. But there are, I can tell you, there are several shows that I have watched over the years that I'll give a shot because, you know, because Glenn Morshower's in it. Of course, Glenn Morshower's pretty much in everything. You can't really turn on your TV right now without watching Glenn Morshower on any movie or any, you know, usually playing a military type. He's really, really good at that. The Resident he's on right now. But I, in my opinion, for what it's worth, TV networks and even the streamers are so fickle in giving a show a real shot. I'm still amazed that they gave 24 the room to grow and to develop without shutting it down, you know, looking at the cost of it, for example, and or those kind of things. But I find TV now doesn't give the same room to grow. And I think many times I start to get hooked on a show and then, oh no, it's not coming back. You know, like it's that happens more often than not, which is extremely frustrating. But if there's somebody from 24 in the cast, I'm more likely to stick with it than if there isn't. Amazing. It's like if you were on 24, this show must be at least worth checking out. So what other shows are you drawn to? Like, what are you watching now? Not right now, but
I mean, I'm working a lot, so I don't get into many shows, but 24 is my favorite show. Mm-hmm. But I would say Breaking Bad is probably the best show that I've seen.
Okay. Yeah.
That show is and I don't think Breaking Bad could have existed in the way that it did without 24.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. How about you, John?
Currently rewatching season 7, but we'll eventually finish season 8 and Living Our Day, Legend, and all that. After that, I'll probably rewatch Fringe again, The Following. I thought a lot of shows that Fox made, a lot of dramas they made, were just excellent, excellent quality. So
yeah,
I did a lot of that rewatch.
I definitely agree. Those are shows. Fringe I watched pretty seriously. The Following, yeah, start to finish, and that was. When I was looking for shows that were similar to 24, I always recommend The Following as one of those that just had that kind of, not quite the same pace, but a lot of the same elements to them. And I like to, again, I read credits. I'm all cards on the table. I'm a total 24 geek. Okay. I was in a room the other night and we were talking about 24 and I said, look, I said, when I'm talking to cast members, I don't want to be like, oh, I'm such a big fan. Hey, what did you do on season? You know, like there was a great SNL sketch with William Shatner where there was a convention, right? And all the people are saying, well, in episode 24, what were you thinking when you did that? And I don't want to be that person. Although in my head, I really want to. I met Kiefer. He came around on his tour when he was doing his music tour. And I was so desperate to be like, ask him 75 questions about the show, but I showed some restraint. And I think I asked one or two and it really talked about, you know, kind of doing some kind of a get together with fans and that kind of stuff. But that wasn't natural. I had to really suppress that because, you know, when you're right there, you just want to ask him everything. Like he would remember everything, right? Absolutely. Yeah. Those definitely, Prison Break was one that I kind of gravitated toward after 24 and when I could binge it all. To me, that makes a difference too. It's like Breaking Bad. I really want to watch start to finish, but when I look at how many episodes there are, it's like I can't carve that much time out of my life. My wife has done that twice. She's a teacher, so on her break, the spring break, she literally just watched Breaking Bad, and she did it all during spring break. And so people, when they said where'd you go for vacation, she would say New Mexico. I went to New Mexico for break. So, however. I have watched enough Breaking Bad to understand Better Call Saul. And I actually have gone back because of Better Call Saul. I've gone back and watched like some key storylines because are you doing Better Call Saul at all?
Yeah, I think I'm a season behind, but yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I love Bob Odenkirk, which again brings you back to Janine Garofalo, which brings you back to 24. You know, certainly talking to Leslie Hope and kind of looking to see all the stuff she had done. I said, you need a 6 degrees game because you've worked with pretty much everybody. It's one of those things. So there, and again, to me, if I see Carlos Bernard's name on a show, I'll check it out. I remember who was involved in Banshee. I can never get his name right. He was Alexis? No, Drazen. Andre Drazen, who is another guy who's been in everything. He pops up in shows left and right. But I watched a show called Banshee because he was on it. And that's kind of a hard one to find. But that is another good comparison, like heavy action, good fight sequences on a cable network so they could swear and all that kind of stuff. So I don't know. As many times as I've seen 24, here's what I don't get. How did he not swear? Like, how did he not just lose it? Like, if you get the DVDs and get the extras, you get the stuff that was bleeped. But how the restraint that they were able to show on that show, the intense emotions that were drawn out in every single episode, but they never dropped an F-bomb.
It's amazing how many times
that's where the damn it came from.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's where
damn it and son of a bitch, and that's all you get.
So many clips of all the Jack damn it's like season 1 through 7, the hilarious.
And I don't know he knew that was going to happen.
I don't mind that because then it's something to look forward to. You know, there's some nostalgia about that.
Yeah. I was impressed. I'm impressed. I mean, like my kids are adults now, but when they were younger, I could actually still watch it with them because, I mean, yes, there are elements of torture and everything else, but I mean, the language wasn't something that was like, oh, I don't want my kids to hear it.
Which made it more amazing when you watch Designated Survivor as president, he did drop F-bombs. So I'm like, right. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, exactly. And then Netflix season, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. It's the versatility is, again, for me, and I know, I'm sure you guys are the same way. The pedigree is if you made it through the cast of 24, if you were on for, you know, 5 or 6 episodes, you're an actor. Like you can do anything if you've done 24. And I really think one of the effects of the initial season of 24 is that once it became a hit, all of those actors get hired out for other stuff. Like you see, how many shows has, Kim Raver done? You know, since 24 ended, even with going back.
Yeah, I'd love to see more of Louis Lombardi.
Yeah. 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 He's one I haven't seen very much. Because what the beauty of the 24 Universe Facebook page is that somebody will jump on and say, hey, Clarice is on right now. And I can't think of his name. There's 3 cast members currently on Clarice, which is the Clarice Starling Silence of the Lambs TV show. So I checked that out. You know, FBI was another one when I saw that there were multiple people that had directed 24 episodes. And same thing, anything John Cassar does, I'm there. Like Forsaken, loved it. You know, he's somebody that I follow, you know, kind of when they've got a new project, I at least want to check it out for sure. That credibility is there because right now, more than 2001, there's way more ways to get shows. I mean, there's shows that drop pretty much every single day, right now. And it's easy to get overwhelmed by how many actual shows are out there and which ones are worth checking out or which ones are going to last. But I need some level of credibility. It's a first world problem, but I need some level of credibility to say this, maybe they're going to stick this one out. But at the same time, I don't put a lot of faith in networks that to stick out a show and let it grow and let it kind of gain an audience, which I'm fortunate that 24 was able to do. Considering they had a plane blow up at the end of the first episode, weeks after 9/11, how they got past that, I don't know.
I think it was delayed. I think they were actually supposed to start sooner, and then they pushed it back to November. Our date was September, and then for obvious reasons, they paused on that.
Absolutely. I mean, in contrast, the movie Donnie Darko was pretty much shut down. That was supposed to release right around the same time because it featured a plane crash as its, you know, core story. So I remember thinking, I don't know if they're going to put 24 on the air. I remember knowing that it was coming, but I knew from the nature of it, is it something that they're going to feel comfortable? Because if you remember the time, there was no joking. There was no sports. There was like the whole world just kind of, it was this really long funeral. And so you had, I remember when SNL came back, it was a big deal because that was right in New York And it was like, okay, we're going to get back to somewhat normal again. I mean, we've experienced something like that in the last year. That's on a different scale, but the climate of television, the climate of everything was, oh, stop everything. So, and it's in those moments that I thought that they might cancel this show that's got Kiefer in it. I didn't really know anybody else in the cast, but they might cancel the show because of the nature of the, you know, what the show is about. It may be too close. It may be too soon to do it. So, I don't give Fox a lot of credit for a lot of things, but I'm grateful that they pushed through to it and you know, took it to air.
I think it's what we needed. I mean, when you look at, how they had to reimagine the Bond series, which I'm a big fan of, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Immediately after 24, suddenly Die Another Day was, you know, the Moonraker of its time, you know, just pokey and everything like that.
Right.
They needed to reimagine it with Daniel Craig and so many different series.
Yeah.
Had, you know, after going through 9/11, anything that was not, didn't have that dark sense of realism,
right,
almost was too fluffy. So I feel like 24 probably benefited in an odd way from the world that we were living in from, right, you know, at that time. And I think that kind of shaped it.
And another thing too is I know they took some criticism over this for the first several seasons, but it was most, of course, focused on terrorism, and a lot of the profiling of the terrorists in the first several seasons, mm-hmm, were Middle Eastern and Muslim, yep, kind of people from 9/11. So,
yep,
and I know it took heat for that, but that was a major part of the story.
I think it's interesting though, because I realized this. All the times where they've leveraged Middle Eastern terrorists, so I think it's 2, 4, 6, I guess all and 8. So all the even.
Right.
Yep. They're Middle Eastern terrorists. There's always either Russians or
Chinese,
white Europeans behind them.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Manipulating them to do all the dirty work. And then when, of course, Jack dispatches them, that's when I think with the exception of Marwan was his own thing.
He was his own thing. Yeah.
He was manipulating some Americans to do what he needed to do. But I think Marwan was the only Middle Eastern mastermind. Everyone else was being manipulated by, you know, European or Eastern powers.
It's interesting that Dustin says that, because I think that's why people often credit Marwan as being the most villain, the most awesome bad guy of them all, because mm-hmm, he was so solo.
He really was. And I had friends that knew I was a big fan of the show, obviously. I mean, time stopped. I would leave parties, whatever the case may be. I was not going to be not near a TV when 24 was on. And I remember there were friends that would bring that up and go, well, wait a minute. They're always attacking this group and they're always doing this. And my response always was, this show is an equal opportunity. Everybody's bad. Like there's Russians, there's Chinese, every national, there's fake countries that they made up. Right. They made up the whole country in Africa for season 7. And made up other countries as well. It wasn't just one group. I said, as long as you're kind of painting everybody with the brush that everybody can't be trusted, right? That it might be Suvorov. It might be this. It might be, the guy that was Logan's secondhand man,
Walt Cummings.
Walt Cummings. Thank you. See, I know I can ask this crowd. I can say one thing and this crowd knows exactly what I'm talking about. Walt Cummings, right? He's behind this. So there's always all these players. And because they were equal opportunity, I really defended that strong to say it's not just one group that they're attacking. Everybody's – there's somebody behind them that's really pulling the strings. And then it turned out to be the Bowers, you know, like all those kind of strings that were being pulled all the way around.
That was a weak plot point though, but we'll get
there. we'll get there. It's not the finest moment.
Yeah, and in season 2, you know, they had to be so careful because they couldn't name the countries. And I didn't pick up on that until the very, you know, until seasons later, but – they kept saying 3 Middle Eastern countries, and I never asked myself at the time which country they're talking about. I didn't care. I was like so into the show.
Yeah.
But then it was revealed later they couldn't reveal it.
I like what they did in 7 and 8 with Sangala, which was a fake country, and then the IRK, which was a fake country. And it's so easy, and I think it was a missed opportunity for a couple of those seasons where they were like, I'm going to attack your country. I'm like, okay, can we come up with a name?
Just do a fake name.
Really simple. Here's something that I've always thought was interesting. I'd like to get your if it's okay.
Absolutely. No, go. Yeah.
So typically, and season one is definitely, has this where it's divided up into a couple of different acts. Season one, two, and three have two acts.
Yeah.
And then they kind of play with it. So what's your preferred act? Is it the Ira Gaines component, episodes 1 through 13, or the Drazen from 14 to 24?
That's a great question. It is hard for me to kind of, because I didn't know watching it that's what was happening, right? It wasn't until you look at it the second time through and you go, oh yeah, this, if it had needed to end, it would have ended there. And that would have been the end of the story. I don't know. What do you think, Joey?
The first half, just because I don't think the Drazens themselves could have accomplished what Ira Gaines did with all of his guys and
kidnapping
and all that. I mean, one of your questions you wanted to pose to us, Ryan, was who's the most villainous player of the season.
Right. Yeah.
I think that, you can go with the obvious Nina Myers, but I think, I had with Ira because he was so calm and control for half the season, including controlling Bauer through the first assassination of Palmer, that it was just, he just had it all going on.
Yeah. Let's see. My answer to that question is Mandy. My go-to is always Mandy. Mandy, boy, I'd like to know where Mandy is. I wanted Mandy to get her own series, to be honest, because I wanted the backstory behind her.
Mandy should have been the what was her name? The woman that Tony was aligned with in Seven at the end.
Yes, yeah.
Part of the Cabal.
Yes,
I forget her name, but
Alan Wilson. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, there needed to be something where she came back because she was just such a good character.
Yeah,
and she just pulsed in and pulsed out when she needed to, but.
Did I mention I followed her on Twitter for years, still do actually. And she posted during the Live Another Day shooting, she posted, it's nice to be back on set, and nobody picked up on it. And I was like, oh, so I'm wondering if there aren't scenes from Live Another Day where Mandy showed up, because I thought of all the characters on the nine seasons, I thought Mandy. And then when she returned, it was always like, oh man, I totally forgot about her. Oh, like the end of season two. That is, again, shooting multiple scenes to throw everybody else, including the extras, off, right? Because there's a scene where David Palmer stands up, and everything's fine. Very similar to the Terry reshoot. But yeah, Mandy, because she blew up the plane, like it's like, the catalyst to everything else that happened throughout the day. And I don't really remember if we know who she was working for.
I think it was whoever at the time would pay her the most money, I felt like.
I'm pretty sure. Yeah. And then watching recently and watching her be pardoned again breaks my heart again, because it's like, oh, when he figures out who she is, it's just it's a magic moment. It's like, yeah, we signed it. We gotta give it to her.
From season three.
From season three. Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely. So what was the biggest shock you would say that happened during season one? Oh, sorry, I didn't answer your question, Dustin. I might go towards the second half.
Yeah.
Because when you saw Drazen try to play Jack and say, your daughter's dead. Make sure she knows, make sure he knows his daughter's dead. And then you see him go into full on insane berserk mode and driving the truck through and just literally like Terminator walking through.
First of many times he goes in solo and just eviscerates everyone.
Absolutely. Yeah. That was the first time you really saw him go into that mode. And to witness it, I remember rewinding that whole scene again going, wow. He literally just tore through that room.
Yeah, and it was so special of a moment that they actually made a special track on that on the soundtrack, Jack's Revenge of the Docks. Mm-hmm. Remember, he broke down and then it was actually a song on the music from that.
We need to do a whole other episode just on Sean Callery. You remove the music from any of those sequences, you lose a whole lot. Absolutely. The man's a genius. Absolutely. So what was your biggest surprise, you would say, in season one?
Okay, well, Dustin's thinking, I'll go. I had two. I thought, of course, Nina being the mole at the very end of episode 23. Yeah. After all the support she provided Jack and his family throughout the day, I think the fact that she was able to be under the radar the whole time was just insane when you rewatched the season knowing that she was the baddie. And then two, the fact that David and Sherry split over the course of one day's events, I recognize that the events occurred before the day, yep. You know, with such as Sherry keeping the secret involving Keith's involvement in the murder of Nicole's rapist. But still, how shocking it was to see the 25 years of marriage just dissolve over one day.
Yeah, yeah. That was pretty crazy. That was pretty crazy.
I don't think there's any way to not say Nina. You know, it was sure. Just such a shock and just setting a, you know, and here's something interesting about the Nina reveal. Apparently, I don't know if they did this on purpose or not. There's always a significant event that happens every season at the 11 o'clock act break. 11 p.m. So in season yes. 2, it's when the bomb goes off. Season 3 was a little weak. It was just when Jack was kissing Nina. Yeah. Season 4, Air Force One is shot down. Season 5 is the reveal of Logan. Season 6 is Audrey is alive. 7 was a little weak. It was just Jack coming exposed to the thing. And season 8 was also a little weak. But there was a couple where it was like there's something special about that 10 p.m. to 11 p.m. Yeah. episode. Yep. Where it always ends in something pretty significant.
An EMP goes off and shuts down CTU or, you know, something catastrophic every single time. Yeah.
Didn't that same thing happen in Live Another Day? Wasn't at the very end and they skipped forward 12 episodes?
Yes.
I think so, yeah. I actually haven't seen Live Another Day as much as I should. I my deepest apologies to
That was another example of berserk mode with Margot Harazi.
Yeah, and he was mentioning earlier about the, you know, Jack going off at the docks and killing him when he thought his daughter was dead. When he found out that Audrey was dead for real, he just went absolutely and just started shooting and Chang-Chi and the whole thing. The fight scene with Chang was just amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
Go ahead. And when he's quote unquote interrogating the Russian who killed Renee.
Right.
That is oddly satisfying.
Oh, it was amazing. Oh, so good.
I was really concerned at the docks that he was going to shoot the cameraman that you accidentally see in that scene. I thought that guy was a goner too. He's going to take out everybody. I'm going to say my biggest surprise from season one is that they were able to recover from the amnesia storyline and get back on track. Like they really, I think somebody, the light went off on and they went, yeah, we got to change this real quick. Let's get a quick cure.
Because you're committed to 24 episodes and it's clear they didn't know what to do with Terry. They didn't know what to do with Kim in season 2.
Right.
But I think they definitely solved that. And that was also them recovering from that was all solidified Tony, at least for a couple of seasons, as the good guy, you know?
Yes. Sure.
He's a good guy. He's someone that we could trust. He comes in at the last minute. Yeah. That was a good Tony moment for sure.
You know, the more I watch season one, the more I appreciate Tony's character. Because he did push back. He pushed back right from day one. And he was skeptical about everything. And I didn't like it at the time because I wanted everybody to agree with Jack the first couple times through. But the more I watch it, I go back to Tony as being kind of almost the rock of that season, for sure. Just always being under people's skin, trying to figure out what's going on. He didn't take anything. He didn't take anything for, you know, face value, which was great.
And he saved the day multiple times, especially in season 4 when he saved Jack and Audrey from that garage.
Yes, absolutely. That was like Superman flying in. I remember that moment and just, I remember jumping out of my chair in that moment and going, yes, I know there's one person I can call. I was like, yes, that's beautiful. Beautiful. Well, we have discussed season 1. We've gotten through it. You want to do this again? Feel like doing another season?
Sure.
Okay. Let's keep to the schedule. We'll move through and do the seasons and get everybody's feedback. I want to thank you for taking the time to join us today and contribute your expertise in your careful study of the show 24 and all of its characters. And it's been fun. I'm looking forward to the next one.
All right. Thanks for having us. Appreciate it.
Thank Absolutely. You. Okay. Have a great day.
Take care.
See you guys.
Barrister.